Father, we do thank you so much, God, for the opportunity to be here. And Lord, I do pray that as we just continue kind of hanging out with Jesus in Galilee, Lord, in the ministry happening in that area and watching him, especially the section in Matthew where there's that combination and that gathering of the miracles that Matthew wants to get across to us. I pray that it would impact our lives, not just the idea that God, that you did miracles and people were healed and people were delivered from demons, but Lord, that we would begin to understand the intensity of your love for us and that you gave up everything in heaven and became man so that we could have eternal life. And yeah, the miracles are great, but Lord, there's nothing better than you. And I pray that we would just begin to fall more in love with you. I pray that as we read these, our trust for you would grow, our love for you would grow, and God, that our hearts would be so filled that we would want to serve you and honor you with our lives. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Hey, today as we continue, we kind of watch Jesus again hanging out in Galilee and mainly hanging around Capernaum. And those of us who have been to Israel, those of us who are just at Israel, you know, that's kind of, once you go there and you see Capernaum, it's sort of burned in your brain of what it looks like. And it's great. It helps the Bible come alive. And listen, he's hanging out there and he's ministering to people and he's doing miracles. And as I said, Matthew kind of collects a bunch of miracles and puts them together. Remember, he's more of a thematic writer than a historic chronological writer. So he kind of just brings some together. What's Matthew's purpose? I want to always bring us back to that. Matthew's purpose is to demonstrate to the Jews, to the people he's writing to, that Jesus is the Messiah. He is the King. And so, again, that's why he's the miracles that he chooses to write about and talk about demonstrate that to the world. So kind of keep that in mind as we're going through this, that's what he's doing. But here's what I love. In this section, in the middle of these miracles, we get this kind of little couple verse, you know, four verse area that has to deal with following him and questions about following him. And I love it. Listen, as people, because people can get attracted to miracles, right? Because, man, you see miracles. Yes, you know, everybody gets excited about that. But Jesus is saying, do you really want to follow me? And I think that's a question we all need to ask. Maybe even ask yourself this morning, why are you following Jesus if you are following Jesus? Why? Why is that? Why do you even come to this church? What's the point? And I think we need to be honest and be able to answer those questions and listen, that we need to let people know, hey, I believe in this resurrected Christ who came to save the world. Why are you involved in ministry? So those are questions that I'm hoping we'll ask, and we'll kind of wrap it around some really cool miracles that happen that we can get all excited about. Now, verse 16, as we pick it up, it says, when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out the spirits with a word, and he healed all who were sick. Now, I want to point something out. Last time we looked at some miracles that Jesus did, and it wasn't necessarily chronological, but this one does follow right after he heals Peter's mother-in-law. And here's the interesting thing: if you check out where Mark or Luke write about this same account, that you'll find out. Listen, especially with Luke, Jesus spends a day doing ministry. I love it when we go to Capernaum. I love to teach that, and because you're hanging out there and you're hanging out for a day with Jesus in Capernaum, and he starts in the morning. Those of us who were just there, he starts in the morning with that synagogue and heals a man in the synagogue, and then kind of just, it's just right across the street. It's great to, you know, right across the street he goes and he touches Peter's mother-in-law, and then it says when evening came. came. So Jesus has been busy, right? And he's been doing ministry. Now, when evening came, more would come. Why? Because the Shabbat's over. Sabbath is over. Remember, a Jewish day goes from sundown to sundown. And so it starts Friday at sundown and runs through Saturday at sundown. So once the sun's down, and they didn't have clocks back then to say, hey, at 6:05, we're gonna do it. They would wait, and the minute they saw two stars, then you could go do the things that you couldn't do during Shabbat. So here's the thing, evening, the stars came out, and man, people are flooding into Capernaum. Why? Because Jesus is there, and they've heard what's going on. And now they're bringing him, and I kind of get a picture, and listen, this isn't a very big place. And you got all of these people like flooding in there and wanting some of his time, wanting him. And they come and it says, listen, man, they brought many who were demon-possessed, and he cast out demons. Now, I don't think as they were bringing people to him, Jesus is doing mass deliverances, you know, like, okay, that group over there, demons come out, and this group over here. I think it was individual, don't you? Because that's how he ministered. And he's spending time with people, and he's praying for people, and he's obviously delivering people. And then it says, man, and then everyone who was sick who came, he prayed for, and they were healed. That had to be an exciting evening, don't you think? Man, I can't help it. I think about this, and I think, what a church service. You know, ever since I got saved, I love going to church. And I know some people think, dude, you're the pastor, you have to go to church. But I've always loved, and here's the thing, because I'm always thinking God's going to do something and I won't be there. I mean, can you imagine those people who, I don't want to hang out with Jesus tonight. I'm going to go, you know, I'm going to go get a shawarma downtown or whatever. And man, look, they missed all of this going on. And how exciting that must have been as he's just ministering to people, loving on people. But also, what about this? How draining. A whole day of doing ministry, a whole day of serving people. And in the evening, you know, especially for me, like on Sundays, in the evening on Sundays, I just want to veg. I don't want to do anything. We get home and Gaynell will say, what do you want for dinner? And I'll say, I am not making any decisions. I'm done. I don't care. Doesn't matter. And she goes, nothing? I go, doesn't matter. I'm done. I'm not making. And you just want to veg. And I'm thinking, man, Jesus was probably wanting to veg, and all these people show up, right? And it's like, well, you can't, because you got to minister to people. And now he's served these people. And I want us to remember, he's 100% human. He's not like 50-50, you know, and so he's a man just like we are. And so he's serving and doing this. And then it tells us, verse 17, this is Matthew letting us know. He says that he was doing that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. So listen, he's letting us know. And Matthew, remember, Matthew quotes the Old Testament more than any of the other gospel writers. Why? Because he's proving Jesus is the Messiah. He's proving that those Old Testament scriptures that spoke about the Messiah are being fulfilled right in front of their eyes. They're watching it happen. And so he goes to Isaiah and Isaiah 53 and he lets them know, man, this is right now being fulfilled. Now, here's something that bothers me. Like, I love verse 17, but I also get bummed out about verse 17, because people take verse 17 and they rip it out of context, and then they take Isaiah 53 and they rip it out of context, the couple verses there, I think 4 and 5, they rip them out of context, and they try and say this, that when Jesus died on the cross, that everyone, all sickness was taken care of. Now, there is some truth to that. But in their idea, it's called, the whole theology of that is called, there's healing in the atonement. Well, listen, if when Jesus died on the cross, he took all sickness away, why do we still get sick? That's my question. Now, listen, some of those people who believe that say they don't get sick. Although they get sick, they deny getting sick. I remember being with one of these people at a meeting one time, and man, this lady had a horrible, horrible cold, and her nose is running, she's blowing her nose, she's hacking, she's coughing, and I mean, it was miserable, and I'm watching her, and I'm feeling bad for her, and then she goes, I don't have this cold. And I go, seriously? And she goes, no. And I go, well, your body does, and you need to do something about it, you know? It's like, come on. We still get sick. And check this out. We still sin, don't we? Sure we do. Some of you are too pious to admit it, but there will come a day when all sin is gone. And there will come a day when all sickness is gone. And in that sense, there is healing in the atonement. We're promised that that's coming, but it's not here and now. And one more thing, and you know what, read Isaiah 53 for homework. I don't want to turn there and get kind of sidetracked, and we did that last night and got not finished. So listen, read it for homework, but kind of keep the idea. If healing really is, if you use this passage, Matthew 8:17, for healing in the atonement, there's a major problem. Matthew is saying, listen what he says once again. He did those things that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. According to Matthew, that Isaiah 53, 50, and 4 and 5 is being fulfilled right in front of them, not on the cross. Are you tracking with me what I'm saying? Listen, he's saying it's being fulfilled right now. And Jesus did take infirmities. He didn't take them upon himself, but he took them away. He was delivering people, but not every single person who was sick during the time Jesus walked. And listen, not every person in Capernaum was healed. And just like today, I believe that God heals miraculously. I pray for people to get healed. I believe that, and I pray believing that God is going to heal them. But I know that he doesn't heal everybody. I don't know why. I think I've shared before. I remember one time being in India. I was in India with Danny Turner, and this person came up to us. We were sharing the gospel, and this person came up to us, this gentleman, and he said, hey, would you pray for my wife? She's dying. And sure. And he said, but I want you to come and pray for her, but I don't want you to come in the house, and can we bring her out on a cot? Sure, we'll do whatever you want. And he brings out this almost skeleton on a cot. And he began to explain to us that she had tuberculosis, and he could either buy food for his children or medicine for his wife, but he couldn't buy both. What a horrible dilemma for him to be in. And so he asked us to pray, and I remember going to that woman, and I remember putting my hands on her, and I was praying, and I was so confident. This whole village was unconverted. There's no believers in this village. And here's my thinking, man. God, this is your chance. And I'm praying. I have never prayed with as much faith as I did that day that she was going to rise up off that cot and she was going to be completely whole and completely healthy. And I prayed, and I got to tell you, when I opened my eyes, I was shocked that she didn't. And she didn't. And 2 days later, she died. Now, I question that. Lord, and again, it sounds kind of funny, but really, Lord, this was a great opportunity you sort of missed. And look at these people. Look what it would have done for this village. Look what it would have done for this man, and et cetera. And his ways are above my ways. And he knows things that I don't know, and I have to learn to accept that. So again, when we talk about healing in the atonement, I don't believe that sickness is done away with, obviously. And I don't believe that, you know, it takes your faith to heal people. I believe God heals who he's going to heal, and he doesn't heal who he's not going to heal. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to, every time somebody asks me to pray, I'm going to pray with faith that they're healed. We anoint people with oil. We do what the Bible says to do, and we believe that God is going to do it. But here's what I do know. Everybody who knows Jesus, who has a relationship with him, will be completely healed one day. May not be in this lifetime, but one day we will be completely healed, and we have that problem. So that's where I'm at with Isaiah 53. So now, back to our story, right? So Jesus is ministering to these people. He's praying for people. They're being healed. They're being delivered. And you got the disciples are probably going, this is so awesome. We're having so much fun. And then verse 18, and when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave a command to depart to the other side. So Jesus looks around and goes, we got to get out of here. right? He's looking at all these people, and here's he's thinking, this is we can't do this. We got to go now, and let's go to the other side. Now, we get a little kind of parenthetical thing, and this is the cool part. We get a parenthetical thing of a couple individuals who came up to talk to Jesus. So Jesus says, let's go to the other side, or as Matthew said, he gave the command to go to the other side. Kind of keep that in mind. Jesus said, we're going to the other side, guys. Get in the boat, right? So those of you, and we'll talk about it more when we get there, but remember the boat's not huge, right? You've been there, you've seen the Jesus boat, the one that they dug up from the first century. So it's not like, when I think of a boat, even when we go on the tour and we get on a boat that holds, you know, 50, 60 people. This is a little thing, right? I almost call it a canoe. It's bigger than a canoe, but, you know, I'm thinking, I'm not going to get on that boat with somebody. I'll walk. So there, now think about the rush. Think about everything that happens. Do you want to get on that boat with Jesus? I want to get on that boat with Jesus. Come on, man. Let's go down there. So these two guys, listen, these two guys come. Number one guy, verse 19. Then a certain scribe came and said to him, Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go. A couple things to note. Number one, this is a scribe. Remember who the scribes are? The scribes are they would call them like the lawyers of today, but not lawyers as far as constitutional or criminal law, lawyers as far as spiritual law. They knew the word of God. They knew it forwards and backwards. Most of them were copiers of the law. They have written it out. They memorized it. Now this guy, that's who this guy is. He's a guy who's meticulous about the law. And he comes up to Jesus, and what does he call him? Teacher. What's the Hebrew word in teacher? Rabbi. That's intense. A scribe calling Jesus rabbi? Something happened in this guy's heart that took him that far. And he comes up and he says, listen, he says, Rabbi, he says, I'll follow you wherever you go. And Jesus goes, for reals? You sure? The guy says, yeah, I don't care. I don't care where it is. I don't care what it is. I'm going to follow you. And some people get excited, you know. And there's that bit. Think about, again, all the miracles that are taking place, the things that are happening. You're caught up in all of that excitement and all of that emotion. And I'll go with you. And Jesus turns to him and said in verse 20, hey, foxes have holes and birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. Now, it's sort of interesting. Jesus looks at this guy, and he's calling him out. He's going, really? You're really going to follow me? And let's boil this down. Here's what Jesus said. If you're really going to follow me, here's what I want you to do. I want you to count the cost. Notice he uses the term Son of Man. This is the first time it's used in the Gospel of Matthew, used over 30 times in Matthew, used over 80 times in the Gospels, and mostly by Jesus. The term Son of Man, it's not about his humanity, it's more about his deity out of Daniel chapter 7. Jesus is claiming, and here's what's amazing, Jesus is claiming his own messiahship by calling himself the Son of Man. And he's claiming deity by calling himself the Son of Man. You would think it would be Son of God, but you got to go back. So for homework, you got Isaiah 53, you got Daniel chapter 7. You know, really read chapter 7, 8, and 9 in Daniel and kind of get the big thing. But listen, the Son of Man, here's what he says. The Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. What is Jesus saying? You want to follow me? It's going to cost. And here's what it's going to cost. Everything. Everything. You know, it's interesting. Some people will, you know, when we're younger, we kind of have these ideas, and I'm thinking of kind of teens, and, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up or whatever, and teens all think they're growing up anyway, but, you know, what are you going to do in your adult life? And, you know, some, man, I want to be, you know, and they might think, well, I want to be, you know, a professional baseball player or professional football or whatever. Do you know the amount of hours that those men and women put into refining their sports? Athletes, trained athletes, Olympians. Olympians don't turn Olympians by just showing up to the Olympics and going, hey, I'm going to try this swimming thing. You think I could do good? Hours and hours and hours. And here's what Jesus is saying. You want to follow me? It takes that kind of dedication. Not this excitement, emotional stuff. Not this stuff that you see that got you all riled up. You need, listen, you're going to follow me? It takes the kind of dedication that you've got to ignore everything else. And you need to know something, man. I was born in a borrowed crib, right? A manger, feeding trough, and I'm going to get buried in a borrowed tomb. Have you ever paid attention to the Gospels? They never, ever once say they went to Jesus' house. They went every place else. They went, listen, he had people. I love it, man. Jesus had peeps everywhere. And wherever he went, he was showing up. He'd go to Mary and Martha's house, and he would go to this guy's house and this guy's house. He'd go to tax collectors' houses. But Jesus never said, come on over to my house. Why? Because he didn't have one. Everything, listen, he lived that way. And now, listen, I'm not saying that if you're going to follow Jesus, you got to sell your house and sell everything. But here's what you do need to do. All of that stuff has to be held lightly, with light hands, not grabbed a hold of. And following Jesus does cost you everything. So he tells it now here's the thing. Between 20 and 21, there's nothing. I always wonder if this guy went on the boat or walked away. Which one did he do? Now, most of the commentators, they say, oh, he walked away. How do we know he walked away? Maybe the guy went, yes, I'm in, and got on a boat. That's, you know, we don't know what happened, right? And then number two comes up, so maybe number two came up and kind of pushed him out of the way, right? Get out of the way, you scribe. And this guy comes up. Now, notice number two, he comes up. Then another of his disciples said to him. Now, here's an interesting thing. It says one of his disciples. When you hear disciple, what do you think? You think like one of the 12 or the people who are sincere or whatever. The word was used very loosely. Listen, just because it says disciples, this is somebody who is following after Jesus, not necessarily following Jesus. Are you with me? And they would be called disciples. So not every time you read disciple doesn't mean somebody who's all in and sold out and part of the ministry. It just means people who are around him and following after him. So kind of keep that in mind, because you can get messed up if you go a different direction. So one of his disciples said to him, Lord, let me first go and bury my father. So what did Jesus say? Foxes have holes, birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. This guy overheard that, and here's what he came up and he says, hey, Lord, I'm going to go with you, no doubts, I'm all in. But first I have to go bury my dad. Now that sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Especially if his dad's like, I don't know what term to use without getting gross, but there. Laid out, ready to get buried. And remember, in Israel, even today, they don't embalm. They bury right away. So you're kind of thinking, well, that kind of makes sense. But listen to what Jesus says to him, and you kind of get the idea of what he's saying. But Jesus said to him, follow me and let the dead bury their dead. Now, that's a little bit insensitive, isn't it? This guy just said, I got to go bury my dad. And Jesus says, man, let the dead bury the dead. Let's go. So I don't think dad was dead. Here's what I think, and it's, again, a custom in the Middle East, even to today. The oldest son had the responsibility to make sure that the family is taken care of and things are taken care of. And the oldest son had the responsibility to make sure that dad would get buried. And here's what this guy is saying. I'll follow you after I get that obligation taken care of. Not that dad's dead now, but when dad dies, I have to be here. So I'm obligated to that. So once that's taken care of, I will follow you. Jesus said, nope, get in a boat now. Now. And he says, let the dead, right? The dead spiritually, take care of the dead. You're saying you're not dead. Let's go. That's heavy. That's intense. Jesus is saying, you know, and here's what a lot of us do. A lot of us say, I will really begin to serve the Lord when? And we have all of these stipulations. I'll serve the Lord when the kids are grown. I'll serve the Lord after they get out of college. I'll serve the Lord after I pay their college debt. I'll serve the Lord when I retire. I'll serve the Lord after my retirement gets better. And listen, you kick that can down the road, so to speak, you're going to kick it down the road your whole life. I've watched that in years of ministry of people who are going to serve the Lord when, whatever, and you fill in the blank. here's what Jesus is saying. Let's go now, right now. Come on. He's calling this guy out. Now, again, we don't know. Here's the thing. Did he go or not? I don't know. Again, the commentators, they like to pick on these guys. I'm kind of thinking, again, the guy went, you know what? You're right. I'm in the boat. He jumps in the boat. So now we got two guys in the boat, right? In my mind. And now other guys, now imagine fighting for position. What boat do you want to get in? I'm sure it was several boats. Which one do you want? I want in with Jesus, man. I don't want any other boat. We'll have a nice talk. We'll have a chat. And who knows what he's going to do on the way. So I don't, again, not sure how many got in, but verse 23, now when he got into the boat, his disciples followed him. Again, disciples. Most of us assume we read that. Now we're assuming all 12 were in that boat. Remember how big that boat was? Those of you who are there. You think 13 guys are in there? It'd be a little bit crowded, wouldn't it? I don't know how many are in there. It's hard to say, but listen, they're in there and they get ready to go. And remember, Jesus has been ministering since morning. Now it's nighttime. Here's what I love, man. They're in the boat and it says, verse 24, and suddenly a great tempest arose on the sea so that the boat was covered with waves, but he was asleep. Is that nuts or what? They get in a boat, they start going, and this huge storm, we'll talk about that in a moment, this huge storm comes up, and here's Jesus in the boat like this. He's gone, man. He is out. Now, a couple things about that. Number one tells me he was fully human. He's exhausted. He's been ministering all day. He's tired. This is Jesus vegging out after church. And he's gone, man. He is out. He is out like a light. And this huge storm shows up and begins. Listen, waves are washing over the boat. He's got to be getting wet. And he's... Have you ever been that tired? Man, when I read this, whenever I read this, I think of, number one, how Jesus sends us into storms of life are kind of cool. But then sometimes he sends us into literal storms. One time we were flying from Tokyo to Fukui in Japan, and somehow we got on this little like prop puddle jumper. I don't even know, but we were so tired, man. We've been flying all day, and man, we're just like worn out. And it's like midnight or something, and we get on this little plane, and we got to go over this mountain range, and so we take off, and there's three of us, and no, there are other passengers, but three of us traveling together, and within 2 minutes we're like just. And we're out, and we hit this horrendous storm. And I remember a couple times, man, the plane must have like fell 30 feet and then stopped. Bam! And you kind of get jarred, and you see lightning, and you wake up, and you go, because you're so tired. That's Jesus. Listen, he's like, what storm? And I remember, man, we landed, and all the other people are freaked out, and we like, get off the plane. We're fine, man. We slept through that, baby. So, listen, sometimes you do, but now the storm. An interesting thing, some people get all carried away about this storm. And even one commentator that I really respect that I read, and I'm not going to say his name, went off on this whole thing that this was a demonic storm. And the devil's sending him a storm so he can't get to the other side. And he's doing these things. And, you know, all of that sounds good, but the scripture doesn't say that. Let's say this is a demonic storm. And if you know anything about that area, the Sea of Galilee is more than 600 feet below sea level. It's down, and it's a warmer place. And then just to the north of it, you have Mount Hermon that's over 9,000 feet high. You can go skiing sometimes in Mount Hermon. And so imagine that cold air coming off of Mount Hermon and going through some of those valleys and some of those wadis, and that cold air comes down and hits the hot air, and boom, man, you get today, what do we call those in Arizona? A microburst. Have you been hit by a microburst? Man, that hits your house. It can do some damage quick. And listen, man, so this came out of nowhere. I have been on the Sea of Galilee when a storm, I don't think it's like this. But a storm showed up, and you go from calm, just like nothing, to kind of, you know, turbulent and trying to get back to the shore. So listen, man, they're saying, this was intense. Notice it was great. And it shows up and this huge storm hits like that. Some people say, you know, there can be waves up to 25 feet on the Sea of Galilee. Now that sounds like to me like maybe that's some evangelistically speaking stuff. I don't know, but it sounds a little stretched, but I don't know. But huge waves are coming and listen, man, this storm hits. Isn't it interesting? Think about this. These disciples are in a storm, not because they disobeyed, but because they obeyed. You see, because sometimes things happen in our lives, and a lot of us, if you're like me, you kind of instantly go to, what sin do I need to get rid of? I remember when I broke my leg mountain biking and I'm laying in the weeds and I'm thinking about and I'm kind of mulling it over and thinking about, you know, what just happened and that it wasn't good. And I confessed every sin I could think of. You know, I was just like, just fix my leg, God, you know, and do that. And we kind of go that direction. But sometimes it's not that. I believe there are times that God leads us into a storm of life because that's the only way we're going to learn what we need to learn. And we need to understand that. And the greatest thing we need to learn, listen closely, is to trust Him. It's to unconditionally trust Him. Does God have your best interest at heart or not? If we're honest, sometimes it doesn't feel like it. You're in a boat and waves are coming in the boat. Doesn't feel like it right now, right? It's a scary time. And you're trying to survive that and you're trying to think about that. And you kind of look over your shoulder and he's snoring. What's up? And you get a little bit freaked out. There's a great song out right now, Fear is a Liar. If you haven't heard it, go and find it. And listen, man. And so you start panicking. And you start thinking about those things. And listen, it's very, 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 I think, common to go there. Because these guys did it. So they're in this storm. And what did verse 18 say? He commanded them to go to the other side. If Jesus says you're going to the other side, you're going to the other side. There shouldn't have been any doubt. But these guys freak out. Verse 25, then his disciples came to him and awoke him saying, Lord, save us, we're perishing. Listen, these guys thought, we're dead. This is it. Save us now, right? And they had to wake him up. I can see him kind of shaking him. Wake up. We're dying. And he's going, I don't really think you're dying. Like, I'm sleeping. You're not going to die. Do you guys not trust me? Do you guys not believe it when I said we're going to the other side? We're going to go to the other side. Doesn't feel like it right now, Lord. Have you been in that storm of life where it didn't feel like you were going to get out of it? You felt trapped? You felt like nothing was going to help you. And you turn around and Jesus is sleeping. That should give you a little clue that everything's okay. The next time you're freaking out in life and coming undone, turn around and see if he's sleeping. If he's sleeping, you're okay. If Jesus is biting his nails, you might get a little concerned. Listen, they turn around and they I don't think they went, Lord, wake up. We're perishing. I think they're going, wake up! Right? I mean, what do you do when you panic? I get loud. I get anxious. And I want to run. And if you're in a boat, you can't run, right? You can't get out of there. I just want out of there. Just let me out. I'm that guy. Pastor Jack reminded me of that the other day. We said something. He goes, because you're the guy that flies, man. You're the guy that's going to take off. And it's right. I am. You know that whole thing when you panic? Are you a fighter or flighter? I'll be gone so fast. Because that's who I am. Listen, man. So if I'm on that boat, I'll run across the water. I don't care, man. I'm out of here. I'm not going to die in this boat, right? But they're panicking. Get up, get up, get up. And then Jesus, it says, look at verse 26. But he said to them, why are you afraid, O you of little faith? Don't you love it? Now listen, I don't think he said, why are you afraid? I think he goes, what's up, guys? And he's wiping, and you know what it's like getting woke up like that? And he's like, what on earth? And the boat's going like this, and he's just like calm. And he's going, why are you guys afraid? Didn't I say we're going to the other side? Do you know who I am? I'm the Son of Man. Did you see me deliver demons? Did you see me heal those people? Did you see me just touch Peter's mom? Did you see me just speak the word to the centurion's servant and he was healed? Did you see any of that? Why are you afraid? And then he makes that statement, oh, you of little faith. If you were here last week, remember when the centurion came to him and the centurion said, I'm a man under authority and I have men under authority, men under me who are under my authority. And he spilled out the whole thing about submission. And then he says, all you have to do is say the word, Jesus, and my servant will be healed. You don't have to go. Don't bother yourself. Just speak the word. And what did Jesus say to him? Wow. In all of Israel, I've never seen such great faith. You know who is standing there? These guys. And what does Jesus say to them? Oh, you of little faith. Boom, right? It's like, ouch. That Gentile has great faith and we have little faith? That hurt. And then I love it, man. Listen, then he arose and he rebuked them and told them he wanted to go back to sleep. He arose and he rebuked the winds. I kind of like that. He rebuked the winds. He got up and here's what he, you guys stop it right now. And he rebuked the winds. And what does it say? Because this is important. And the winds in the sea. And there was great calm. Notice a great storm or a great tempest was there. And when Jesus spoke the word, what was it? It wasn't just calm. There was a great calm. In other words, it went shoo. And it's done. That doesn't happen too often with storms, right? Storms may come fast, but they usually don't leave fast. They usually kind of meander away. This is gone in a moment, in an instant. The one who created the world has control over his world. Now, I know some might say, then why doesn't he take care of everything? You can ask him that when you get to heaven. We live in a fallen world, but he's demonstrating here. I read something the other day, and I don't have it all. I should have written it down, I guess. It's talking about like the earth spins at 1,000 miles an hour at the equator. That's pretty fast, right? I can't figure out why we're not more dizzy, but you know. And then the trip around, the orbit around the sun is some like, I don't know, 18 million miles or something. And we go at a 1,000 miles a second as we're going around. Now think about all of this movement. And then listen, our whole little solar system is doing all of this in the midst of all of that and traveling so fast in space. And all of that is happening. And nothing collides, usually. Some people go, what about androids? That's a phone, don't worry about it. But listen, man, you have all that stuff going on and you have all of this movement and he keeps it under control. Do you think he might be able to handle a wave? How big is your God? That's the question. And he rebukes it and there's like complete calm. And look at these guys' reaction, verse 27. So the men marveled, saying, who can this be that even the winds and the sea obey him? Who is this? Wow. Is your God that amazing? Is your God in control of things? If not, you need a new God. My God's got things under control. Does he do everything that I think he should do, the way he should do it, the way I think he should do it, et cetera, et cetera? Absolutely not. Listen, God is not at my beck and call to fulfill all of my little heart's desires and all of the things. And I thank him for that. I thank him that he says no often. Not in the midst of it. I whine just like everybody else. I remember when we're on Hereford Road and I was wanting to move into town, and I can't tell you guys the number of places that I prayed for, the number of places that I looked at, the number of places, man. I would do it. I would write people letters and say, can you just give us that property? I remember Robert Ferrell said, Pat, would you stop doing that? And I go, why? He goes, you're embarrassing me. And I go, one of these days someone's going to do it, and then I'll have the property. But I remember, man, and I remember one in particular. This was it. I knew this was the place. This is it, God. And you know, and God just said no. And look where we are. I mean, if you dropped a pin in the middle of Sierra Vista, it would be just about here. How great, and who knew, right? He's always, listen, trust him. And who is he? Who is this one who controls the storm? He's the same one who controls the universe. He's the same one who keeps that. And he's the same one who cares about you as an individual. We just read, man, he was ministering to individuals. He cares about us. So then here's the question. You going to follow him? You going to go? Are you all in? Are you going to go all the way? I think it was Bonhoeffer. I think I have this quote down by Bonhoeffer. And here's what I think, what he said, if I can find it. I lost it. Anyway, Bonhoeffer said, here it is. Listen, only he who obeys truly believes, and only he who believes truly obeys. Wow, that's intense, huh? And if you don't know who Bonhoeffer is, man, go get his biography in the bookstore or download it and read it. Amazing guy. But are you all in? Man, you know what? I want us to be people who we're all in no matter what. Let's stand up and pray.